Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is episode 7 in season 2 of Insider Interviews, where you always get the insider's scoop on the business of media, marketing, and advertising. Now, episode 7 is a very special one because you're getting 2 for the price of 1. Now, of course, there's no price to listening to this podcast. You can support me at buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal if you would like. However, for this episode, you're first getting a brief interview with me and Lydia Boychuk, who is the VP of Marketing for More Labs. And she'll talk about how they balance both direct-to-consumer marketing and retail marketing for their nutritional supplements, which quite frankly have frequently helped me sleep, focus, and get over a hangover. So we'll talk with her about that. And then we get into the meat of the episode with the CEO of Ampersand, Nicole Pangis. It's a great conversation. Nicole is incredibly personal in her communication and very specific about what the television industry and advertising really needs to do to continue to evolve. And Ampersand has done just that. We talk about everything from data and measurement to effective creative, using AI or not, on through her personal brand, which is a big shout out to work-life balance and how she mentors others and some personal discoveries on through brand purpose. So you get it all here in episode 7 of Insider Interviews. Here we go. Hey, it's E.B. Moss, and this is another episode of Insider Interviews, and we have a special pre-roll guest with us today. It is a friend and a marketer that I highly admire. It's Lydia Boychuk. She is the VP of Marketing for More Labs, and she agreed to have a little quick conversation with us before we get into our next guest. Hi, Lydia.
Hey, E.B., how are you?
I'm good. Better for seeing you. It's been a little while. Well, you know, I am feeling motivated. I'm feeling focused. I had a good night's sleep. And let's explain why as I hold up a couple of items here.
Look at those.
As well as your famous
morning recovery.
More Labs. Yeah. At the risk of sounding like a little endorsement, which this is, I'm endorsing it. Tell us about More Labs and what each of those products does.
So More Labs is a functional beverage company. It was founded in 2017 by our founder, Si-Sun Lee, and his mission was really to find products that can help improve people's lives and help consumers do more each and every day, hence More Labs. It lets you do more. He started with the flagship product, Morning Recovery, which is a hangover prevention drink. So it helps consumers avoid rough mornings after drinking. And so you really kind of drink the shot while you're having a beverage of choice. And it allows you to wake up without some of those nasty headaches and nauseous feelings. People love it across the US, and it has deep roots in Eastern medicine and Asia as well. So that's our hero product. And we also have 2 other products that help you do more. Liquid Focus, which is a nootropic based energy and productivity drink. It kicks in 30 minutes and you can do anything and everything on your to-do list, even if it's as long as a CVS receipt. And then Dreamwell, which is a sleep drink, which helps you fall asleep in 30 minutes. It has ingredients like lemon balm, which help the mind relax. It has melatonin and other things that help you fall asleep and wake up feeling refreshed.
Wow, great top line. I did seriously get a good night's sleep. I really want to thank you because you sent me some of the product to try. And those times when I've been at marketing conferences, it's come in handy as well. And you mentioned the to-do list with the Liquid Focus. But if you could find me an admin or a virtual assistant, that would be even better, I think, for my to-do list. But
great.
First of all, you came from the pharma space, right?
At a brand called Nature Made.
That is a bigger, well-known brand. And so your job is to get the name out for this quasi-startup. It's what, about 5 years old, I think?
Yes, absolutely.
More Labs. What is your drug of choice in terms of your marketing tactics? What are you finding really working for you to get the More Labs name and awareness out there?
For us, to your point, we still are a very small startup brand. And so our biggest objective is to drive trial and awareness. We need to absolutely get the name out there. And the best way to do that is through trial. Liquid to lips is what we like to call it, or sips to lips. So we try and get out into the marketplace and align with craft beer exhibits or food and wine exhibits and things like that, and get in front of as many people as possible. For Liquid Focus, we do a lot of sampling in WeWorks, which makes sense for folks who are trying to be productive and trying to focus. And then from an awareness perspective, influencers have been working really well for us to really get our name out there. And we've recently started to dip our toes into the podcast space because it's also a thriving platform and channel that we know a lot of tried and true D2C brands use to really generate that awareness. So we're excited about kind of dipping our toes into that horizon as well.
Terrific. And so you are both a D2C product, direct to consumer, as well as at retail. And you know, the big buzz these days is retail media, retail marketing. Are you involved in that? And have you been able to take advantage of in-store media?
Yeah, D2C is really kind of where we cut our teeth. It's where we started. But as you know, in order to scale, D2C brands have to move into brick and mortar and into retail. And so that's what the team has been aggressively doing over the last few years, just to try and increase our distribution as a way to gain that awareness with consumers. And so we've been kind of aggressively doing a lot of traditional things, like getting the right merchandising up in stores, making sure that we're doing some trial opportunities in retailers that allow us to do that. And then from a small scale perspective, you know, running some of those promotions in store, because we know that that's really important for consumers. Consumers are still looking for deals in order to sample and try a product. And then for a few select retailers, we are doing some programs where we're trying to drive velocity through a new up and coming and emerging partner called Aisle to generate some trial with new consumers.
That's interesting. So you really are omnichannel, of course. Podcasting, which is awesome. You're in store, you're at events, etc. But are you doing TV yet, for example?
We are not doing TV yet, but it's a something that's near and dear to my heart. I had a lot of experience in my previous role, and I think it's a really important medium within the entire advertising universe. And so it's something that we've discussed and perhaps something to explore in 2024.
Well, it just so happens that my next guest will be talking a lot about that space as I welcome Nicole Panges. So you were the perfect lead-in. You set me up so well for that. I really, really want to thank you for chatting with us, Lydia Boychuk of More Labs. And I'm going to finish my to-do list, and then I'm going to sleep well tonight. And after I celebrate with the conclusion of this podcast, I will be taking my morning recovery. Thank you.
I love this. Thanks so much, EB.
You as well. Hey, this is EB Moss, and it is episode 7. Lucky 7, because I am here with Nicole Panges, the CEO of Ampersand, as in and. Ampersand, and she has a lot to tell us about media marketing and the world of, we're going to call it all things television, because I think that's what the ampersand might refer to. So with that said, hello, Nicole.
Hi, Evie. Nice to see you.
Thank you. The same to you. So I want to just dive in, because the television business is a little complicated. So will you talk to us like we're kindergartners, my favorite line, and and give us the very basics of what Ampersand is?
Sure. Well, Ampersand is a television media company. The roots of the company started in national spot linear television in the 1980s. And for those who may not know what national spot means, It means multi-market local advertising. So cable operators then and now have their own footprint. So depending on who you subscribe to from a cable perspective, whether it's Comcast or Charter or Cox or Altice or, you know, you have your cable subscription, but there's various providers in each market. So this company basically created an interface for the buy side to buy market level cable buys in the 1980s and the 90s. And it just made it simpler to buy cable television at that time as cable started growing. It expanded into satellite and telco companies as well. So we now, you know, many, many decades later, represent all the satellite, all the telco, and all the cable operators across the United States. In 2018, when I joined, there was a decision made by the ownership to aggregate all the television insights, so the television data, which cable operators have a lot of, all the viewership across all the households that they represent, and aggregate all of the national addressable inventory as well, which is a growing piece of the television marketplace. And so now we sort of play in the sandbox, both in our traditional business of national spot, but we've extended it into digital inventory as well, not just linear. And then also, you know, sell a national addressable product as well.
Well, I'm thinking that was more of a senior in high school than kindergartner, but I followed. But thank you. That actually lays the groundwork for us beautifully. And now you are owned by the three C's, the Comcast, the Charter, and the Cox companies of the world, correct? And
that's right.
And yet you represent beyond their inventory?
That's right. We represent the inventory of all of the cable companies, the telco companies, and the satellite companies.
Ah.
So Dish, Direct, Altice, Verizon, and all of the major cable operators in the United States. So when I joined in 2018, having not come from a TV background myself, as I was learning more and more about the company, sort of my shticky one-liner was, it's the biggest TV company you've never heard of, because it actually is one of the most substantial media businesses in the United States, believe it or not, and in television. But because it played in the national spot marketplace, you know, it wasn't, if you know, for people that bought that business, they knew the company, but sort of the broader media industry certainly did not.
Right. Well, you know that I knew the company.
I do.
And for those who didn't know, my resume includes starting the sales promotion department of what was then called National Cable Communications and then became NCC Media back in the 90s. So we did not work together, but I love our sort of Venn diagram for a second there. So other than the name change, a lot has changed in the television industry. And how would you describe what you were then versus what you are now in a nutshell?
Well, you'll be happy to know, Evie, that the sales promotions department that you started lives on in 2023. So I'll start there. So thank you, because so you started something that is now multiple decades in development.
A legacy.
Exactly. So, you know, the television marketplace is changing, just like the world is changing, just like there's so much transformation going on in the world. And a lot of it is because the world is becoming more and more digital. You know, that at the crux is what is creating sort of the transformation in the TV industry, in the broader media industry, and certainly in the world. Mm-hmm. Is just digitization and the creation of, you know, more data that's being harnessed across various industries. And so this company is evolving just like many, many other companies, which is we now have different data and broader data and more specific data than existed, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And so what we've done in the business, both within the, you know, the traditional, let's say, quote unquote, linear television business, but also certainly addressable, is bring better data to the buyers of media so that they can make better informed decisions. And what that means, from a practical perspective, to go back to your kindergartner, is when you have better data upon which to make decisions within marketing and advertising, arguably and hopefully, the brands get better results, number one. We're both marketers, but also consumers, right? So I'm in the marketing business, but obviously I'm also buying product. You know, relevancy of advertising and messaging is becoming more and more interesting. So if we harness it well, if we harness this data well, hopefully as a consumer, you're also receiving brand messages that make more sense for you based on where you live, based on your interests, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this is sort of, you know, creating a much different ecosystem. Now, I will say we don't have it down yet. You know, as you know, I have two daughters, and I watch how they consume media and how they consume advertising as part of media. And even, you know, at third and sixth grade, they are actually realizing what advertising they're interested in, right, what advertising they're not. So it's been interesting even just watching the next generation come up, and just be so much more aware of it as well.
You know, it's funny that you brought that up, because I am going to give you credit, and I'm also going to name drop another company I worked at. I didn't work with you at NCC/Ampersand, but I did write about you when I was an editor at Media Village, and you gave me an aha moment. It was maybe a year and a half into your tenure, I think back in 2020. And I want to quote something that you said. It's so smart and it's still so applicable, you know, speaking of your kids. Nicole Pan just took a sidebar on semantics, saying that streaming or pay aren't different. They're TV, just delivered differently. My kids, she said, don't ask when they're watching. Hey, is this linear? She said. She also pointed out that brands will lean in wherever there's the most audience with scalability and measurement. So I think that line from 3 years ago is still so applicable. And, you know, you just said television is television. So tell us how that is still challenging advertisers and the world of measurement.
So the world is becoming more fragmented, right? And from a television perspective, there are lots of ways to consume content. I think that's good. It's evolution. The thing about evolution in any industry is that it becomes messy before it cleans itself up, right? Evolution is not clean. So there's a lot of discussion within the ecosystem right now of how you measure different types of media, right? Because linear, for example, is measured differently than streaming, because streaming looks a lot more like digital than sort of traditional television. And traditional television was measured, you know, by Nielsen. They, you know, they're the big gorilla in that business for many, many decades now. And it's based on a panel. Mm-hmm. Streaming, which looks more like digital, which is the background that I came from before taking this role, is one-to-one. Like, did somebody view this ad? Yes, that's called an impression. And then you add up how many impressions, and that's how you bill that, mm-hmm. right? And that's how you measure success in that. So they're two different, it's like Greek and English, right? So how do you marry these two worlds together? Because we're going to be dancing in it for a long time. I think more than most people want to admit, frankly, because I think there's this narrative of the demise of linear. But the truth is, if you actually look at the data, you know, I think there's lots of headlines in our industry. I think very few people actually dig into the headline and understand the data. If you look at the data, if you just pick up the marketing spend that is currently being executed in linear and try to pick it up and moving into every streaming environment that exists. Right. Think of every single big name that is getting touted. You would not be able to deliver the messaging, period, end of story. There is simply not enough streaming inventory to make up for the heft of linear. It is still by far the most viewing hours, like from an inventory perspective, because not all streaming is ad supported. Mm-hmm. So it's not as simple, I think, as as is advertised sometimes, no pun intended. So I do think linear, will be around much, much longer, which means that we need to sort of figure out the measurement around both of these ecosystems so that brands can make intelligent decisions across the two ecosystems.
Okay, that's another aha moment for me from Nicole Pangis about supply and demand. And while there's a lot of buzz about digital and CTV, we still need the broad scale and reach of linear, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, got
it. That's right. And we will for the foreseeable future.
All right, good. All right. So some of the major networks are very happy with that as they see their own business fractionalized. Now, let me just drop another role as the then editor of The Continuum, which is a trade publication about the balance of brand and demand, using your favorite word, and. Do advertisers sort of go in one lane to create brand awareness versus demand? Can linear create demand? Can, CTV and digital create awareness? Do you see that kind of fractionalized from a creative perspective?
I think it is an and. I think, traditional television was and is both a brand building medium. Mm-hmm. But certainly also drives results. Now, I mentioned earlier, and that I came from the digital side.
Yeah.
And my joke is, when I moved to TV, that my whole career was spent, basically poo-pooing television, just saying, you can't really measure it, meaning it couldn't be measured the way digital can.
Yeah. Right?
So if you see an ad in digital, you could track that somebody clicked on the ad and then bought the product, and right? So it's like a cause and effect, right? But the truth is, frankly, I didn't appreciate it until I've been here almost 5 years now, believe it or not. But I didn't appreciate it until I came over and really started understanding the heft of television and the amount of data and all of these things as we started building, aggregating the data insights and building the technology around them. And I had an aha moment, speaking of aha moments, which is I had this realization that television was actually responsible for a lot of the attribution that digital has been taking credit for, because you see television advertising for months and years ahead of seeing the digital ad.
Yes.
And let's be honest, television commercials from a quality content perspective are, generally speaking, much more high quality than typical digital ads.
Yes.
Right? So, digital is basically taking the attribution of television.
Yes.
Right. And so there's lots of companies now within the television ecosystem that are building attribution models that really marry sort of traditional television with digital. So I do think traditional television is both brand building, but also drives results, actions that sit very often in the digital side of the world, because that is a very actionable data set. Similarly, I think you can't 100% discount the digital world, because I think you can also build brands in digital. I know for sure that I've seen, within digital ecosystems, brands that I had never heard of before, that I bought their product, strictly from a digital environment and not from television. So
you're saying TikTok made you buy it?
Not TikTok specifically, but for sure.
Okay.
But for sure across ecosystems. Yeah,
exactly. And one of the interviews that I did a couple of years back was with Ethan Heftman, who is now an ampersander. He was at A&E. And
that's right.
Ethan also talks about the power of sight, sound, and motion being so valuable in that, creative appeal of video. So I do want to come back to your roots in that digital and data-driven space, but let's keep going on that path of creative for a second, because you guys work with everybody. You work across every advertising vertical. You have inventory of all things video. I think you call it total TV. Tell me about some really creative, cool things that you've seen or been able to help implement.
Sure. Well, on that, I'll speak to two things. So I think there's sort of technical implementation that is it's creative technical implementation. So some of the technical creative implementation that I think is very cool, and it foots to what I was talking about of when you have better data, you can do interesting things, right? There's lots of companies, frankly, that have television data. Some have more than we do from a numbers perspective. What's unique about Ampersand, though, and that, you know, the reason that I came here, frankly, 5 years ago, is that it's not just that we have data. You can have data and you can say like, oh, this campaign worked or it didn't work or whatever. The difference with us is we can actually activate it on a household level because of our ownership and partnerships. Other companies, they can get the insights, but they can't actually like action them. So it's like, okay, so you know what you need to do, but then you can't actually pick it up and do it. We uniquely can pick it up and then do it.
Okay.
At the biggest scale in television. And I could say that with a bit of swagger, but because of who owns us and because of who we partner with, that is a true statement.
Is that because, you know, the Cox, the Comcast, the Charters, that is their first party data, so to speak?
They own the connection into the home. So if you're talking, you know, there's a lot of discussion about cord cutting. My colleague Andrew Ward has been saying it for many years, and he just wrote a piece that was published last week. But it's cord cutting is an incorrect statement. What's happening is their cord moving, moving from linear to digital. But the companies that own the cord are the same companies that owned the cord before.
Okay.
So we can deliver into the household, which is where our addressable business comes in. So if you're a brand, you can say, okay, here's how my holistic television looks like. And when you say about Total TV, the reason that we say that is because we can pull in national schedules that we have nothing to do with. Because national schedules, national advertising television is a great way to build the brand, right? All the national networks have a huge amount of reach and really great quality content. This is not new. Everybody knows this. So national is, you know, definitely a brand building and a really powerful way to buy television and efficient. But what happens in national is that it grows reach, meaning you're finding new people to see your message. But at some point, there's a plateau. Mm-hmm. What's unique about us, and when you're talking about sort of creativity and advertising, when we work with brands, we can see where that plateaus the rest of their television. And then we can find the households that they would have wanted based on the audience that they want to find. Say like, okay, that's great. You reach this many households and that's fantastic in the first 3 or 4 weeks of your ad campaign, but you didn't reach any of these households that we know definitively what they are. And you were very underexposed to these households. And we can literally, I call it the easy button, but in our user interface, you can literally click a button and just target those houses with the same message from your national campaigns. But now you're finding a whole net new group of people. And so it's, you know, you have no waste and spend, right? Because now you're not targeting the same households over and over and over again. So
and annoying the same people over and over.
Correct. So that's sort of like an interesting creative technical implementation. The other thing that, frankly, we're not doing at scale now, but some of the networks are testing and there's retail media networks that are testing that I just think is just, you know, this is not an Ampersand commercial. This is a television, I think, opportunity that I hope Ampersand is a part of, but it would require lots of companies to be a part of so that it scales. I'm very intrigued by, and again, this is being tested, but not at the scale that it could be over time, around the ability to do shoppable ads, the ability to, you know, for consumers to sort of have preferences of what they want to see. And I just think our televisions are going to become more like computers or phones, where if you see a product or a commercial, you can literally click a button and buy the thing or get more information to your email about it or whatever. So that's where I think the opportunity really lies. And I think sort of future opportunity when you're talking about relevance of advertising for consumers, I hope we move in that direction. Now, that's not an easy button itself. That's going to take a lot of companies working together. And obviously, given the evolving, which I agree with, privacy regulations going on, how we do it is going to be very important, because relevancy of advertising is good, creepiness factor is bad, right? So we have to find.
Sounds like my last date. Yeah. Sorry. I digress.
We're in the same boat, Evie.
Okay. We'll talk.
But you know what I mean? I think that's a really interesting frontier. You know, I was on a panel with Christy from Albertsons, yep. who I have great respect and admiration for. But I think it's going to take companies like Ampersand, companies like Albertsons, like the retail media networks, yep. companies like Criteo, I think identity providers, like the Blockgraphs and the InfoSums, all these companies, I mean, they're working together already, mm-hmm. but I think to really drive sort of shoppable experiences for consumers in television, it's going to take like 3 or 4 or 5 different categories of companies working seamlessly together to make that scale. To me, I just think it's going to be such a huge opportunity, you know, across all of those types of companies to really make a really unique and growing ecosystem as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. I understand the excellent creative ad scheduling and placement and navigating with data. What about my old cohort in the sales promotion team? Do you get down in the trenches and help do things in store, work with those Albertsons retail media networks, go beyond what I'm just going to call it a TV rep firm might be perceived as limited by?
We definitely do that. So sales promotions, because not everybody might not know what that is. So we work with brands and, you know, we have it. And again, you know, maybe not everybody, but a lot of companies do this. The networks certainly do. But we can, because we can tailor messages mm-hmm. and because we do multi-market buys, what our sales promotion team does is basically tweak the creative mm-hmm. the commercial based on the geography that it's going to be delivered in, right?
Brilliant.
And so it's sort of creative versioning, I would say. Uh-huh. That's what we called it in the digital world.
Yep.
But we do that, you know, within Ampersand. It's for our footprint in that yeah. example that we deliver on their behalf. But, you know, different geographies might, you know, I'm going to make it up, but, you know, Seattle, Washington, might not have palm trees within their ads, but, you know, Los Angeles would, for example. And so the sales promotion team can do it based on like the climate, the message, the language, obviously locations, if it's a retailer, or overlay the actual addresses of locations or a car dealership or that sort of situation.
Are you as afraid of AI or embracing it as me? because as a writer, I don't know.
Well, I will say this. I remember because I was in, you know, what I call traditional digital, which is kind of hokey, but, you know, I came out of a 24/7, which was one of the original digital ad networks from the late 90s. And then programmatic came in. And at the time, I remember this is, I would say like mid 2005, 2006 is when programmatic started creeping his head up. But I remember at that time that our sellers were petrified that programmatic would take their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what really happened, you know, in some cases the roles changed, but it actually created more jobs. If you think about like a Google that is predominantly a programmatic platform, think of how many people they've employed, and Amazon also programmatic. So I try to be a bit more measured about how I look at these things, because generally speaking, evolution of businesses and technology has, you know, created maybe different jobs, but created jobs.
Different.
I think in the case of, different jobs, which is okay, right? Because I think, you know, we all need to evolve. Mm-hmm. Like the world has never not evolved, right?
Right.
So like, it's going to change. You know, when cars came out, when Henry Ford created a car, like, you know, there's less like horse saddles, but lots more cars, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know what I mean? And I feel this way, by the way, about social media as well, right? I don't think social media in and of itself is a bad thing. I think how we practically implemented social media into our culture, it's the mental crisis of our time.
Yeah,
and, you know, and I hate, you know, I know that people that will, you know, be listening to this are probably in that space, but that's, we have to just be honest about where we screwed up. And to me that we screwed up, right? I've as I said, my daughters, I'm petrified about their mental well-being, predominantly because of that environment, right? So, and I think AI is like that, meaning AI can be used for good, right? AI can also be used for not good.
Right.
And I think where we should learn from our mistakes is to be really intentional about how we use this technology. Like we have a lot of, you know, machine learning in our technology stack, like many companies do. And that's mostly good. You have to make sure that you check for bias and all that sort of stuff. But like, there's some good that comes out of that, right? We can create proposals for clients faster because of machine learning models. That's good. And we're constantly looking at the machine learning models to make sure that they're as accurate as can be and, you know, make up when they're not and all that sort of stuff. But if you don't take a lot of care in how technology is, you know, evolves, then it could be really negative as well. So I think there will be a place for AI, you know, in our space and in our world. But, you know, what I worry about, not as a media executive, but just as a human, as a mother, I just worry about, you know, our history of how we've applied some of these technologies and not really being mindful of the implications to our world and to our kids and to ourselves, frankly.
Yeah, completely agree. And what was the line that I read today, that 2024 will be the year of the deep fake election, you know, on both sides? It's I guess let's for now hope that you can stick to maybe adding graphic overlays of palm trees for the southern climate. Don't go crazy. Anyway, we've talked a little bit about your data and digital background, and you mentioned, you know, you did run 24/7, which is awesome. And then you've been in the C-suite, mostly as CRO, COO of Group M, for Pete's sake, at Zaxis. How did you land in the C-suite to begin with? And then how did that lead you to Ampersand?
So how did I end up in the C-suite? I think it's a combination of, I worked incredibly hard my whole life. From when I was a kid, I've said this in previous interviews, like I was just one of those, you know, from the time I was a kid,
you
I was
did your homework.
Running. I did, for sure.
So annoying.
You know, it was expected of me when I was growing up. You know, I grew up in a very strict household. So like, you know, excelling in academics was expected.
Yeah.
And hard work was expected. I came from an immigrant family. And so it was very just like keep your, you know, it wasn't about fun. Even as a child, it was like work.
Yeah.
You know, it was a work. It was a working household. Which is good and bad. Like everything has goods and bads. Like my mom always says, like, you probably wouldn't be the CEO of a company, if we hadn't been like that. But I'm like, oh, it would have been fun to like have a little more fun as a kid. So there's always like good and bads of things. So I've worked really hard in my career, and I am a curious person by nature. So anything new that was happening, as my career progressed, I would always lean into it at the same time that others were leaning out of it. So I think that's one. Two is that I pretty much, until the time that I left Group M, which is the first time that I said no to an opportunity when I resigned. But up until that point, which was just like 5 years ago now, five and a half, I always said yes to any opportunity presented to me, even when I didn't know how to do the job. So Dave Moore, who is my boss at 24/7, the CEO, asked me to run Europe for the company. And I was based in New York with a newborn. I said yes. Like, I figured it out. John Sue, who was at one point also the CEO of 24/7, asked me to run a joint venture with Dentsu that we were deploying.
Yeah.
I might have still been in my 20s, maybe early 30s. But to be a young woman running a joint venture with a Tokyo-based firm, it's very unique. And John Sue sort of really took a chance by doing that. But I said yes. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. But he was a great, you know, he was a great leader and a great boss to me, and just like made sure that when I had stupid questions, he answered them. And, you know, it was a very successful partnership that lasted a long time. And, you know, and Dave and John are examples. Ari Blumen, who unfortunately passed away, is another example. Despite me working hard and despite me saying yes, like, you can't get opportunities unless people believe in you.
Right.
And those are three notable names for my career mm-hmm. and my life, frankly. Like, they're all people who I'm lucky to have called friends. So I think you need people around you who believe in you, frankly, before you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Those are sort of my three sort of pillars that I think about when I think of how I got to the C-suite at, you know, fairly young age, running pretty big businesses as well. There's a lot of C-suite titles now.
Yeah.
Probably too many, frankly.
Right.
Like, there's C-suite people that don't have any people under them or have like a handful of people or don't really have a function. So I was lucky in that I was given roles that were real roles,
yep.
you know, and I was very young, but, they had my back every single time
right.
that I had a question. You, so I was lucky.
You also raised your hand, and it's interesting because season two of Insider Interviews has been, female executive heavy, but I particularly want to call out episode 6 with Erin Levzo. She's now the CMO of Museum of Ice Cream and came from Del Taco and Wingstop and things like that. And she said almost word for word, Nicole, that even when she didn't really know what she was doing, she just said yes. And then she figured it out.
That's right.
And I like to say that my mantra is, you know, I've hijacked Nike's slogan of not just do it, but just figure it out and do it. I think that that is fantastic advice because you have to put your big girl pants on and dive in and just be brave and figure it out. So
that's right.
Kudos to you. But what's also interesting to me is that you said that you came from a fairly strict background, but I know that you personally are a big advocate of wellness and work-life balance. So you found your way into that. Has that sort of made its place known at Ampersand from a management style, finding balance?
I sure hope so. I hope that if anybody in Ampersand listens to this, that they would be in violent agreement of that. It's something that I do talk about a lot. The reason I talk about it a lot is because I got it wrong for so long.
Oh, we want to know that story.
To my point of just like keeping my head down, like I had no balance, right? There was no boundaries really. You know, when I had my oldest daughter, who's now 12, that's when it started pivoting to me because I used to be at work till whatever time. I was married fairly young in my 20s, but I just like, maybe this is why I'm divorced now, but like I didn't worry about getting home to see my husband. I just worked until I didn't. And that was often 9, 10 o'clock, whatever it was. And then I was the first one in the door in the morning for years, right? Not for like a month or a week or whatever, like for years. And I didn't worry about, frankly, taking care of myself. And I wasn't very active, even though I was very active earlier in my life.
Yeah.
Like once I started my career, that was all that mattered to me, frankly. And then when I had my daughter, you can't do that. First of all, I was a nursing mom, right? So you have to get home to like feed your child. And I wanted to spend time with her. Mm-hmm. It mattered to me to be there more. And it was at a time that I ran Europe, which was tricky, but I wanted to be around more.
Yeah.
That is when I started realizing I needed to shift. That started. And then I had my second daughter and it became a lot more complicated. And so I just slowly went through this evolution of realizing that what I was doing, A, it wasn't good for me. B, when you have kids, anybody who's a parent, you know, the second that you have a child, at least for me, all I thought about was being the best role model to my daughter. And then when my second daughter came, same thing, right? So then I just said, I don't want them to live the way I'm living. Like all that mattered, like that's not what I want for them. I want them to have happiness and I want them to have health and I want them to have all these things. And so I just started pivoting myself, talk about an aha moment.
Yep.
And so I started eating better. I started running, like, and because I'm sort of a personality, I didn't just start like running a mile. I started running half marathons.
Of course,
and marathons.
You did.
And so it's become a real focus for me. And I, as I mentioned, I'm divorced now, but through my divorce process also, I've just become very vocal yep. that, you know, there's a lot of people in our industry and frankly in the world that are just like living a caricature of life that they were taught to live mm-hmm. as opposed to the life that they want to live for themselves. And so a lot of the focus on wellness isn't just about physical wellness or eating well, although those are two very important things, but just like, is it the life that you want for yourself or the life that somebody else imagined for you?
Yep.
And I'm vocal about that because I think we're sort of shamed into, you know, living a caricature of life that we were told to live. Certainly coming out of a Greek household, like I should not be a divorced mom of two kids. Like that is
pressure,
not acceptable in my culture.
Wow.
Right. And so I talk about it because I think it's important that we start normalizing the fact that this stuff has an impact on your mental well-being, your physical well-being. You know, if you live with stress and you live with sort of discontent in your being, like mm-hmm. in your body, mm-hmm. that will impact your health. You will die earlier. You will have a heart attack. You will, all of this stuff matters. So I talk about it with an ampersand because like I give tons of time off. We shut down for 2 weeks besides everybody's PTO. We shut down half days on Fridays in the summer. We bring in meditation people. We have Thrive Global, it's Arianna Huffington's
right.
company,
I
which
have
is
the book.
All about wellness. Yeah, the book is amazing.
Thrive.
Her book changed. There's two things that changed my life. Her book was one of them.
Yeah.
And attending a conference that she ran. And two was X Factor, which is a WPP program that Charlotte Beers used to run, who was the first global CEO of an agency. She ran Ogilvy. And I took a women's leadership class that WPP under Martin used to run.
Uh-huh.
Those two things, I think, really changed my life. It took years, obviously, because it's hard to,
right.
to grow muscle. You have to grow courage to do that. That doesn't happen overnight. But I'm so passionate about it. And I just think it's so important for people to live their, I know
yes.
it's an overused term now, this authenticity thing.
Yep.
But more people than not live inauthentically. And I just think it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the adults and also for our children who are learning from us.
Yeah.
Right? My parents lived for what others perceived of them as opposed to their own happiness. And I don't want to show that to my children. So I'm really trying to break the mold and I'm vocal about it.
Thank you.
Because I want people to have courage and strength
yeah.
to just live for, you know, to feel good inside of themselves as opposed to worry about
you
know, being
Nicole.
Judged by others.
Yeah, you. Now, another small world with us is that Episode 2 happened to be with Mary Baglivo, who was one of the leads of Ogilvy under Charlotte Beers. And she
yeah.
is also now very vocal as well about women's balance and leadership as well. And I'm going to add a link to that. And another coincidence is that our pre-roll for this episode is a brief discussion with Lydia Boychuk, who is the VP of marketing for More Labs. What do? They create sort of those nutritional supplements that help you with sleep, that help you focus, that help you with hangovers. Again, we'll talk. But, you know, so I love that there's a bit of a thread, not through just this conversation, but also with other conversations that I've had. So that's awesome. I want to wrap it up with one more question while we're sort of on that purpose-driven aspect. And I ask all of my guests this this season, what is your definition of brand purpose? And I know that you have mentored a lot, so we understand your personal brand, but let's talk about a corporate brand. How perhaps Ampersand leads with brand purpose itself? And then what's your perspective on the value of that for, you know, the Albertsons, the Staples, the whatevers of the world as well?
So I think I think of Ampersand in two ways. One is sort of external brand purpose. Our mission statement is build brands, inspire people.
Good.
That is our mission statement. We created it shortly after I got there. It's stuck since 2018 when we created them. So building brands, mm-hmm. again, going back to sort of the truth of what is the value of television, it's brand building, right? It's brand building. And we talked about it earlier, but it's about driving results for brands. So from an external perspective, whether it's Christie or any client that we work with, how we partner with them, and this is where the ampersand came in. The reason that I chose that name for the company is I think it takes a village in advertising, just the way it takes a village in life, to create successful marketing messaging, right? Yeah. And to grow successful brands. And so it's not just about ampersand. It's about obviously the agency. It's about the brand itself. It's about all the partners that we work with, which are many and it's increasing number with every year that goes by.
Yes.
So I think building valuable, trusted partnerships across the buy, sell side and everybody in between is where I think, you know, our brand reputation, I hope, is growing. Like, I hope that more and more companies look at Ampersand as threading the needle on inventory and data and brand messaging and the partners that sort of empower that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we will be the only partner, but I do believe over time we will be an increasingly important partner based on our assets, based on our scale. We sit on the largest, you know, amount of television inventory from a share perspective in the United States. I think we are a powerful and important partner for brands.
Nice.
And then I think internally, it's like what we talked about, which is my hope is that when somebody interviews with our company and somebody's been with our company, whether it's day one or we have colleagues that have been with the company, you know this.
Oh, I do know.
Like, I've never
Steve
seen
Howe.
A company. Yeah.
Joe Grisafi.
Exactly. And we're lucky to have them. But we have people 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, and lots of them, not one or two, right? Like most companies, like, oh, 30 years. But like our list is like, I see it every quarter and I'm like, oh my God, like people just stay. So whether it's day one interview process or 30 years, that people feel proud of what they do in the office and supported in the office to be who they are, supporting from a work perspective, from a human perspective, and from a wellness perspective. And that to me, that's more important.
Yeah.
Than the financial, thankfully we're doing well there too, but I just think it's so important. And I do think it drives financial results.
Yes.
I think happy employees, content teams drive better business, like period, end of story.
Two more questions. The next to the last one is, can I come back?
I love it.
And the next one, she didn't answer. The next one is, what's the future?
You're being cheeky, I'm sure. You want to run promotions again?
Yeah. Love it.
I love it.
Oh, you heard it here first.
EB, in all seriousness, we should talk. You should come back because it'd be fun. It'd be fun for you to talk to our team about NCC in the 90s. You can actually tag team with Steve Howe.
I will.
And Grisafi.
That's right. That's right. All right. So my last serious question.
Yeah,
that's kind of serious. But my last serious question just like brief projection for where the industry is heading. Let's say I'm giving you 18 months. What are we seeing?
I don't think we'll have this measurement discussion solved for in 18 months.
Yeah,
totally. But I think we'll make good progress by then.
Good. Okay.
I do. Because I think there's various companies, Nielsen being one of them, Comscore being another one, you have VideoAmp, iSpot, there's lots of companies. Mm-hmm. So I think there's progress being made, a lot more conversations and just a lot more digging in.
Yeah.
Going back to the retail media discussion, I think in 18 months, there's going to be a lot of evolution there as well, which I'm super excited about. It's like one of the areas, sort of the intersection of retail media, television, and creating a better consumer experience through privacy compliant data, I think is a huge frontier over the next n number of years. And I think in the next 18 months, we're going to see a lot of progress there as well. And what I hope is that we just get better as an industry about buying television generally over the next 18 months yeah. because it's very kludgy. It's very messy right now. Some of it has to do with measurement, but not all of it has to do with measurement. Some of it is a people, I'll say, issue mm-hmm. that there's just not an interest in changing how TV is bought. But frankly, like, we need to change how TV is bought because there's much better ways.
Right.
And the data insights are there now for agencies to buy differently as well.
It's interesting because I do also write about, for example, the out-of-home industry. And it's the same thing that I'm hearing there where, aside from consistent measurement and that kind of challenge between digital and static billboards, et cetera, it's also a question of how creative agencies will really get, how brave they will be to explore less than the traditional approach to things. So yeah. Overall, the media industry is benefiting from forward-thinking leaders like you, Nicole Panges. So thank you for both the personal and professional perspective that you shared so freely today. It was a fantastic conversation. Can't wait to go on a double date with you.
Thank you, Evie. It was great to see you.
Thank
great
you. Thanks for listening to another episode of Insider Interviews. If you'd like your own pre-roll interview and you're an executive in media marketing and advertising, reach out to me at podcasts@mossappeal.com. And everyone can also save with 20% off of More Labs at morelabs.com using promo code INSIDER20. It's 20% off at morelabs.com. Use INSIDER20. If you'd like to support this podcast in another way, find me at buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal. Thank you so much for listening.